Support. Please make your contribution online at kpfk.org.
On the line is Gilbert Saucedo. He's a sustaining member of KPFK, an attorney who has a special message for people who are interested in social justice. Welcome to Politics or Pedagogy.
Hi, John. Thank you for having me in this program.
Very good to talk with you because you have an event planned that I think KPFK listeners would like to know about. Tell us about the event.
Yeah, the event is a fundraiser for the Foundation for Economic and Social Justice. It's going to happen on September 29th. It's a Sunday from 2 to 5 p.m. In Long Beach. And it's going to be a really fun event because we're going to have a live Sonora Dinamita is going to be performing live. We have a buffet lunch. And most of all, it's going to be a great cause. The foundation's mission is to deal with issues of poverty. And this is important because we live in the richest country in the world, and yet we have a staggering number of people who live in poverty. And the Foundation for Economic and Social Justice is committed to addressing the root causes of extreme poverty and ameliorating some of its effects. Our vision is a society where we have economic democracy and where basic human rights and social justice are protected. So our ideal is to have an economic system of full employment where even those who are the most marginalized can earn enough to provide their family with the basic necessities of life and are treated with dignity and respect. So this event is our fourth fundraiser since this foundation has been in existence, and we hope it'll be a success. So we invite all your listeners to come and support it. With that, I'll see if you have any questions, John.
Please give our listeners a website where they can get in touch with you.
Well, the website for the foundation is foundationjustice.org. And the event, I guess that where you, if you go to the website, you'll be able to find a way to buy a ticket or a table or make a donation for this to this organization.
On that note, Attorney Gilbert Saucedo, I want to thank you very much for joining us on Politics or Pedagogy.
Thank you, John.
This is John Crumshaw. On KPFK, you hear more than a soundbite. That's education. That's our mission. Please make your contribution at 818-985-5735 or pledge online at kpfk.org.
You're listening to KPFK 90.7 FM, Los Angeles.
Good afternoon, and welcome to Middle East in Focus. I'm Esty Chandler. As Mitchell Plitnick wrote at MondaWise last week, quote, on August 31st, when the dead bodies of six captives, including a dual American-Israeli citizen, were found in a tunnel in Rafah, President Joe Biden made a statement that very day condemning and threatening Hamas for the act. In comparison, when Israel killed activist Aysenor Ezgi, a dual Turkish-American citizen in the West Bank town of Beita, the White House was silent. Neither Biden nor the Democratic nominee, Kamala Harris, said a word, end quote. One need not put their eyeglasses on to see yet another double standard in the way our government treats any situation involving Israel. During the weekly demonstration in Beita, on the morning of September 6th, Israeli forces fired two rounds, the first hitting a Palestinian man in the leg, injuring him. The second round was fired at international human rights activists who were observing the demonstration, striking American Aysenor Ezgi Egi in the head, killing her. Aysenor's death echoes previous IDF killings of Americans, including Palestinian-American journalist Shireen Abu Akleh, who was shot dead by an Israeli occupation force sniper in the West Bank in May of 2023 while doing her job, reporting, and wearing a press helmet and vest. and that of Rachel Corey, a college student who, like Eisner, grew up in Washington State and had joined the International Solidarity Movement when she was crushed to death by an Israeli military bulldozer during a protest in Rafah against the demolitions of homes in Gaza. We are joined by two guests today to discuss the double standard for Americans killed by Israelis, as evidenced by the cases of Rachel Shireen and now 26-year-old Eisner Ezgi-Egi, as well as increasing settler violence in the West Bank and growing Zionist McCarthyism in America. Huwaida Araf is a Palestinian-American civil and human rights attorney and human rights activist. In 2001, Huwaida co-founded the International Solidarity Movement, a Palestinian-led nonviolent resistance movement which has twice been nominated for a Nobel Peace Prize. She is also a member of the National Lawyers Guild, and in 2022, she ran for Congress in Michigan. It is always a great pleasure to welcome Huwaida Araf back to Middle East in Focus. Huwaida, can you hear us?
Yes, I can hear you.
Fantastic. Also joining our conversation today is Johanna Gressay. Johanna is an actor, singer, and producer based in Brooklyn, New York. She made her off-Broadway debut in Love Letters Made Easy, which she also assistant directed. And more recently, she was the lead in her off-Broadway debut in the new play, A Brief Encounter. She is now producing and starring in the Brooklyn premiere of My Name is Rachel Corey, a play the late actor and director Alan Rickman, along with Catherine Viner, now editor-in-chief of The Guardian, edited from Rachel Corey's writings. The show will be performed at The Rat New York on October 4th, 5th, 11th, and 12th. I am very happy to welcome Johanna Gressay to Middle East in Focus.
Thank you, Esty. I'm really excited to be here.
Huwaida, I want to start by expressing our condolences for the loss of yet another member of the ISM family. Sadly, Eisner's murder is just another example of the decades of impunity granted to the Israeli government and military, bolstered by the unconditional support of the U.S. government, which is fully complicit in enabling the ongoing genocide in Gaza. Can you discuss that impunity and the double standard it has created for not only Palestinian Americans, but also any American seemingly who speaks out for Palestinian equality and those harmed by Israeli soldiers?
Thank you, Esty. Yes, I also extend my condolences to Aisha Noor's family and friends. I unfortunately did not have the pleasure of knowing her, but from everything I read and heard about her, she was just an incredible human being and traveled to the occupied Palestinian territory in order to support more directly Palestinians who are really trying to survive their annihilation by Israel. As you said, for decades, we have been seeing this double standard. Aisha Noor was killed last month, but we had 20 years before her, Rachel Corey. We had, you mentioned Shireen Abu Akleh. Also, want to mention a couple of others. We had 19-year-old Furqan Duran, who was killed in 2010 when he was with us on the Freedom Flotilla, trying to break Israel's siege on Gaza and get in. And of course, this was before this genocide, but get in much needed food and other material. Just in the spring, we had a World Central Kitchen worker, Joseph Flickinger. Last year, we had a 80-year-old, I think actually he was 78, Omar Assad, who was, you know, visiting his homeland and just in a very brutal, uncalled for manner was stopped as he was on his way home by Israeli forces and was gagged and blindfolded and handcuffed and then just left for dead. And there is never a U.S. investigation, except for we hear that there, you know, the U.S. with Shireen Abu Akleh has authorized an FBI investigation that has been ongoing now for almost 2 years, but we don't have any kind of update. Will it be public? Will it not? In every other case, it's always the United States leaving it up to Israel to investigate themselves, which never works because they always exonerate themselves. They always say it was an accident, it was unintentional, and then they go on and blame the victim that they brought it upon themselves, because why were they there in the first place? And it creates a culture of impunity. That's what we've seen. And the message that it gives is that the United States will always privilege Israel and this Israeli impunity over the rights of their citizens. And that is a very dangerous message to give on the ground. It translates to how soldiers also act, because they know that they will not be held accountable. They know that certainly for decades and decades, have never been held accountable for Palestinian lives, but even now, lives of internationals, that when their own governments of these internationals and here American citizens do not penalize Israel at all, then that message is received twice. These soldiers receive it once from their own government, that always kind of sanctions what they do, and then also from the American government that also nothing will happen. And so there is no, I don't even want to call it, it's not an incentive, but there is nothing preventing them from just being as brutal as they can. And they are, because there is this mass hatred and dehumanization of Palestinians. It also translates into anyone coming in solidarity with Palestinians, that they are also rightful victims of Israeli brutality. And again, it is absolutely shameful that this is the position of the U.S. government, because the priority, one of the most important jobs that a government has, is to protect and see to the safety of their civilians, of their citizens. And that's the U.S. right. has failed miserably when it comes to their citizens hurt and killed by Israel.
That's right. Johanna, can you talk about when you decided to put up the production of My Name is Rachel Corrie in New York this year? And what was it about Rachel's story that you thought could make a difference at this time?
Well, I saw the play a couple years ago, actually, with this at the Seeing Place Theater with she passed away, Erin Cronican. I'm not sure if I'm saying her name correctly. I apologize to her loved ones who are still here, but a lovely local actress who was fantastic, played Rachel then a few years ago. And I don't know that sunk in as much as it has now more recently, but I remember seeing it and just being like, this is going on. This is crazy. And then with everything going on now, I was kind of shocked that nobody else was doing this play again here in New York. Cause I just feel like her story needs to be told again. And it's a great access point for people to be able to see someone who is American, who went over there and just really talked about her story. I kind of, you know, she talks about a little in the play how she's not sure how she got into activism. And when I say the play, I should explain, it's her edited writing. So it's not like she sat down and wrote the play. Her parents gathered all the writings, gave them to the people you mentioned. After she passed away, her parents gave them to them. But she talks about, I don't know how I really got into activism. I kind of fell into it. And I feel kind of similar with this situation. But obviously, like everybody else, I was very disgusted by it. I'm still disgusted by what's going on over there. And also as someone who's half Jewish, I feel beyond frustrated, someone who's also bi. I also, there's two different communities I'm part of that they're saying, oh, we're protecting you. No, you don't get to say that. That's not, it's absolutely not. And it's just, it's heartbreaking. And I really wanted to do, I've gone to a lot of protests, but sometimes when you talk to people who don't really understand, I felt like Rachel's words could speak much stronger than mine could. And I hope people will come with an open heart and come and listen just for a little bit, because there's nothing to me that's controversial in this. She's just telling her story.
And you must have been well into, no worries. You must have been well into pre-production on the play when the story broke earlier this month about the shooting of Aishanor by an Israeli occupation force sniper. Like Rachel, Aishanor was both from Washington State and was a volunteer with an international solidarity movement. What were your thoughts when you first heard the news of her murder a couple weeks ago?
I mean, it's horrible. I mean, it's a repeat of the same thing, some similar, very similar thing. I think it just seems like Israel just does whatever Israel wants. And a lot of that's because of our country. And it's extremely shameful and it's extremely frustrating. And to just think that you're going on a peaceful mission to try to help people, and that's not even okay. Like I read how she was underneath an olive tree, I think. And Huwada, sorry if I'm saying that wrong, but I am also sorry for the loss of your colleague. Even if you didn't meet her, that's, and your guys' work is amazing, by the way. So I'm honored to be here with you as well. But it was just, it's heartbreaking. There's every day there's another loss over there. Every day there's several losses, really. And then you're hearing about how they're kicking the journalists out of Israel totally now, Al Jazeera. So it's just heartbreaking. It's sad. I don't, you know, it's, and how anybody can still at this point defend, and I want to be clear, the state of Israel. I'm not talking about the people, the state. I don't understand. It just baffles my mind. So
you're listening to Middle East in Focus on listener-supported KPFK. I'm Esty Chandler, very grateful to be joined today by civil rights attorney and human rights attorney and co-founder of the International Solidarity Movement, Huwaida Araf, and Johanna Grisey, now producing and starring in the Brooklyn premiere of My Name is Rachel Corrie at the Rat New York on October 4th, 5th, 11th, and 12th, discussing the double standard specifically for Americans killed by Israelis, as evidenced by the cases of Rachel Corrie, Shireen Abu Akleh, and now 26-year-old Aishnor Ezgi Egi, and also about increasing settler violence in the West Bank and growing Zionist McCarthyism in America. Huwaida, compounded by the massive settler violence in the West Bank, it seems likely that there will soon be cases of Jewish American settlers being sued for inflicting grave harm on Palestinian Americans in the West Bank, kind of similar to the case of Alex Oda, although he was murdered in California. But the murderers are now settlers living in settlements in Israel and not being brought back to face justice. What do you think American courts might do with civil cases being brought by and against American citizens?
That's a good question. That remains to be seen, but we know what American courts have done with other cases that have tried to hold Israeli officials, the state of Israel, and corporations that are complicit in Israel's human rights violations accountable. And the record is abysmal. We have, even today, a case where a number of Palestinian and Palestinian Americans, both individuals and organizations, have filed a lawsuit against against President Biden and Secretary of State Blinken and Austin for their complicity, really, in genocide. And unfortunately, that case was dismissed not because the judge found that it wasn't credible. In fact, this was a Bush-appointed judge who has been on the bench for over 20 years. And when he delivered his ruling, commented that this was the most difficult case that he has heard in his career, and actually said that the evidence showed that Israel is plausibly committing genocide, and urged the American government to rethink their support for Israel, but ultimately determined that he did not have jurisdiction to decide this case. And there is this principle in the law that the courts don't get involved when it comes to a political question and running foreign policy. And a lot of these questions come under, are described as having to do with foreign policy, even though this case specifically against Biden, Blinken, and Austin, there was strong, very strong argument that it's not interfering in foreign policy at all. It's actually bringing a case against these individuals for violating U.S. law, which also prevents and prohibits participating in a genocide in any way. But it's always an easy way out, you know, for the courts to say this is a political question. And they've done that because Rachel Corrie's parents have tried to bring a lawsuit against Caterpillar Bulldozer Company, which has known for years that Israel uses this product to commit human rights violations. In the parents of Furkan Dugan tried to bring a case against the state of Israel, and Ehud Barak And that was also dismissed. And so you have, and these cases were dismissed, not just because the court in and of itself decided that they can't get involved because of the political question, but the United States government interfered in these cases and submitted briefs to say the court should stay out of it because this is a political question that the courts can't get involved in. So the United States government has not only been absolutely absent and shamefully not pursuing justice, but has been getting it involved in preventing the families of Americans killed by Israel from seeking justice in other ways. And that not only violates our senses of being able to get some kind of justice for victims of human rights abuses against perpetrators, but it violates U.S. law. It's absolutely, I don't want to say mind-boggling, but more Americans need to be aware that Israel is not only violating international law and the United States is not only violating international law in its support of Israel, but it's also violating U.S. law. In the case, for example, of Omar Asad, who I mentioned, there was movement and there was a big push to actually suspend weapons transfers to the unit that is responsible, that was responsible for killing him. It is a unit in the Israeli military, Netzah Yehuda, that is notorious for human rights abuses. And we thought for a minute that the United States might sanction them by saying no U.S. aid can go to this unit. And then just last month, Secretary of State Blinken said, oh no, we are satisfied that they've remedied the issue because they slapped a couple soldiers on the wrist. Okay. So these are the kind of exceptions. Now, just briefly, your question, that doesn't mean that we stop using the law to seek justice. Again, the United States has been blocking these kinds of effort, but going after Israeli settlers would be possible. There'll be a lot of challenges, of course, because these Americans that go over to Israel, they're going to colonize and they go and sit in the occupied Palestinian territories and steal land, but stay there. So you'd have to get jurisdiction over them. They'd have to actually come back. You'd have to identify them. They'd have to come back here. And then we can look at these cases. I don't know that there has been any yet, but there are a lot of lawyers, not only in the United States, but around the world that are looking to in the different ways that we can try to use the law to do what our governments aren't doing.
Right. Johanna, Zionist McCarthyism has, much like Eugene McCarthyism, hit Hollywood and the entertainment industry hard. In spite of Israeli apartheid having existed longer than South African apartheid and the siege of Gaza being in place for over 17 years, we've not seen an international Artists Against Israeli Apartheid musical festival last summer or any time before. Can you briefly talk about the repression against Palestinian equality activism from your perspective as an artist?
Sure. I don't know if it's okay to mention, but we're both part of a group, SAG for Ceasefire. That's fantastic. We're a group of artists who are trying to fight against that. But it's crazy because during Black Lives Matter, that's probably when I started really getting into protests and I learned a lot on the streets, you know, how to handle that. But for that, everybody was supporting it. Everybody was okay with it. Everyone was great. But for some reason with Palestine, it's like, there are people who, that's the difficulty I actually had with this play, because I was thrilled when people were like, we're excited for it, but they were also, I was confused too, because they would say, that's brave. I'm like, I'm just doing this play. It's the least I can do. But there are people who, you know, I talked to before I had my current team who I mentioned it and they're like, I don't know if I can do this. I'm sorry. Cause you know, I don't know if I can go against the state of Israel. And it's very strange because there's so many people who seem to have an allegiance to a country that's not even their own country. And I've learned a lot through SAG for Ceasefire about how tied in our government is to Israel. It's insane, the amount of money. And if you think, if you're listening and you think, by the way, I know it's not totally on your point, sorry, but if you think that it doesn't affect you, it does, because every government, our whole government gives a lot of money to Israel, but also our cities. Our cities right now, it goes to the cops, and a lot of that money also goes to Israel. So the biggest difference, I would say, is just seeing how afraid people are to talk about Palestine. The fact that I was, you know, I recently got a manager and I was kind of like, I hope if she realizes she's not going to drop me. Hasn't happened yet, but I know people that it, you know, it has happened for like that. But all we're saying is we want a killing of an innocence to stop, and the insanity to think that it's offensive to say we don't want an entire people to be genocided out of this planet is just, I don't even have any more words, I guess, for it, but it really definitely is. And one thing I do want to mention real quick something that was heartbreaking, because when I first wanted to do this play, I was really hoping to get a Palestinian director. Unfortunately, that didn't work out. I think everybody was blessedly busy and stuff like that, and probably nervous. And I think that nervousness that I mentioned could also be, I talked to a friend who is, she's MENA, not Palestinian, but she was saying to me, Indian American, she was saying how, I don't know about finding other Palestinians for you, because Palestinians, sorry, they didn't always want to say they were Palestinian in Hollywood. How heartbreaking is that, that they couldn't even say who they are in their industry? And we're artists. We want to speak up. So thank you.
That's right. No, that's beautiful. Thank you. Huwaida, in our last 2 minutes, across the country, we're seeing campus administrations instituting biased speech, assembly, and educational restrictions on students and educators. And as artists and employees, like we've just heard, are being fired and blacklisted for publicly demonstrating support for Palestinian and Palestine advocacy, organizations are now being investigated, creating a tidal wave of Zionist McCarthyism across the country. Can you briefly talk about the legal fight ahead to combat Zionist McCarthyism in this country, where not only are international laws being broken, and as you said, U.S. laws, also state and local laws?
Oh, absolutely. And we are seeing this magnified on college campuses because of the students speaking up and bravely, ethically, morally speaking up in what I am confident in just a few years' time, the university administrations will be hanging their head for in shame for not supporting, but actually persecuting and prosecuting their students. And here I am in Michigan, the University of Michigan, just last week, brutally attacked students, hospitalizing two, arresting four for a nonviolent die-in, you know, in on campus. And now, also last week, the Attorney General of the state, the highest law enforcement authority of the state of Michigan, decided that it is going to pursue charges, criminal charges against 11 people, most of them students who were affiliated with the encampments this last spring, some of them for misdemeanor trespass charges, the highest law enforcement authority in the state. You can see that there is such a double standard and an attempt. This is not even getting into how the universities are breaking their own code of conduct and ethics and bylaws in order to go after students in order to silence them. It is really, really shameful. But the positive of that is that you have like an army of attorneys who are volunteering their time pro bono to step up and defend, because we know that this is an attack on freedom of speech. This is an attack on our rights as American citizens, again, in defense of Israel. So prioritizing Israel and defense of Israel and keeping Israel immune from criticism over the rights of citizens, not only abroad, but also here at home. So there are attorneys and there are people going to law school to become attorneys specifically to fight this. And so the university administration, city, states, the country can shamefully continue doing this, but we won't be silent. And there are at every level attorneys stepping up to defend the people who are organizing to defend Palestinian rights. And and that fight will continue.
I can't thank you both enough for taking time out of your weekend to join us today. When Cindy and Craig Corey heard about the recent death of Aishnur, the young college graduate from Washington at the hand of an Israeli soldier, it reopened a 21-year-old wound. Craig Corey said, quote, "You feel the ripping apart again of your own family when you know that it's happening to another family. There's a hole there that's never going to be filled for each of these families," end quote. The couple lobbied for decades to demand justice in Rachel's case, which the Israeli military, quote unquote, investigated and exonerated itself from, and the U.S. refused to launch its own investigation of. In 2015, the Israeli Supreme Court ruled against the Coreys in a civil lawsuit they brought seeking to hold Israel liable. The company have joined a litany of human rights advocates and organizations calling for an independent investigation into Aishnur's death, saying that they fear her case will go unpunished like that of Rachel. Sarah Lee Whitson of Democracy for the Arab World Now, a nonprofit advocacy group, said, quote, "The penalty for unlawfully and unjustly shooting protesters dead isn't future changes. The appropriate remedy is prosecution for those guilty, for those responsible for doing this," end quote. Once again, I want to thank our guests, human rights and civil rights attorney and co-founder of the International Solidarity Movement, Huwaida Araf, and Johanna Grisey, now producing and starring in the Brooklyn premiere of My Name is Rachel Corrie. Links to